This meeting is being held in person in City Hall, Room 400, and broadcast live on SFGov TV. The Small Business Commission thanks Media Services and SFGov TV for televising the meeting, which can be viewed on SFGov TV 2 or live streamed at sfgovtv.org. We welcome the public's participation in person during public comment periods. There will be an opportunity for general public comment at the end of the meeting, and there will be an opportunity to comment on each discussion or action item on the agenda. Public comment during the meeting is limited to 3 minutes per speaker. An alarm will sound once time has finished. Speakers are requested but not required to state their names. SFGov TV, please show the Office of Small Business slide.
Today we will begin with a reminder that the Small Business Commission is the official public forum to voice your opinions and concerns about policies that affect the economic vitality of small businesses in San Francisco. Please call item one.
Item one, roll call. Commissioner Benitez.
Present.
Commissioner Cornett.
Present.
Commissioner Dickerson is absent. Commissioner Herbert.
Present.
President Huey.
Here.
Commissioner Ortiz Cartagena.
Here.
Vice President Cisunas.
Present.
President, you have a quorum.
Thank you. The San Francisco Small Business Commission and Office of Small Business staff acknowledges that we are on the unceded ancestral homeland of the Ramaytush Ohlone, who are the original inhabitants of the San Francisco Peninsula. As the indigenous stewards of this land and in accordance with their traditions, the Ramaytush Ohlone have never ceded, lost, nor forgotten their responsibilities as the caretakers of this place, as well as for all peoples who reside in their traditional territory. As guests, we recognize that we benefit from living and working on their traditional homeland. We wish to pay our respects by acknowledging the ancestors, elders, and relatives of the Ramaytush Ohlone community and by affirming their sovereign rights as First Peoples. Please call item two.
Item two, approval of legacy business registry applications and resolutions. This is a discussion and action item. The commission will discuss and possibly take action to approve legacy business registry applications. Presenting, we have Richard Carrillo, Legacy Business Program Manager with the Office of Small Business.
Thank you, Richard.
Good afternoon, President Huey, Vice President Cisunas, Commissioner, City Staff, members of the public. I'm Richard Carrillo, Legacy Business Program Manager. I'd like to acknowledge Michelle Reynolds, my colleague in the Office of Small Business, who provides beneficial assistance to the Legacy Business Program. SFGov TV, I have a PowerPoint presentation. Before you today are three applications for your consideration for the Legacy Business Registry. Each application includes a staff report, a draft resolution, the application itself, and documents from the Planning Department. The applications were submitted to planning on September 18th and heard by the Historic Preservation Commission on October 16th. Item 2A is Oscar's Photo Lab. The business is a photo lab established in 1982, located in the South of Market neighborhood. Oscar's Photo Lab specializes in preserving your precious memories through a range of services tailored to your needs. Their specialties include professional film processing, printing services, film scanning, photo lab services, high-quality photo mounting, and restoration and retouching services. To make things more convenient for you, they also do film processing by mail. Oscar's Photo Lab is dedicated to safeguarding the moments that matter most to you. The core feature tradition the business must maintain to remain on the Legacy Business Registry is photography services. Item 2B is PACT, Plan of Action for Challenging Times. The nonprofit organization was founded in 1963 and officially established in 1964 and headquartered in the Divisadero Corridor. Founded during the Civil Rights Movement, Plan of Action for Challenging Times, or PACT Inc., provides low-income youth and young adults with the tools to help them achieve their goals of going to college and securing economic stability. PACT Inc. promotes community empowerment by increasing access to higher education and by positively impacting graduation, dropout, and college-going rates. Their vision is to provide the best educational services and the best advice, the best place to work, and the best work environment for educating, inspiring, and motivating others. The core feature tradition the business must maintain is services for youth. Item 2C is Shaw Shoes. The business is a shoe store established in 1970 and located in Cow Hollow. Shaw Shoes is a second-generation family business selling shoes for every occasion, sourced from Italy and beyond. They are the oldest retail store on Union Street in the Cow Hollow neighborhood. Shaw Shoes specializes in high-end Italian footwear and accessories, and most of their merchandise is imported directly from Italy using their own transporters and importers. Visit Shaw Shoes to buy unique Italian shoes, discover new designers, and learn about the latest shoe trends. The core feature tradition the business must maintain is shoe store. All of the businesses met the three criteria required for listing on the Legacy Business Registry, and all have received a positive recommendation from the Historic Preservation Commission. Legacy Business Program staff recommends adding the businesses to the registry and has drafted a resolution for each business for your consideration. A motion in support of the businesses should be framed as a motion in favor of the resolutions. Thank you. This concludes my presentation. I'm happy to answer any questions. There are business representatives present who may wish to speak on behalf of the applications during public comment.
Thank you very much, Rick. Commissioners, any questions? Okay. Seeing no questions at this time, we'd like to open up for public comment.
You can come forward to the mic if you'd like to speak.
Hi, everyone. My name is Annette Dennett, and I am excited to be here today on behalf of Plan of Action for Challenging Times, otherwise known as PACT Inc., short name. We are a local, community-based nonprofit organization. And I wanted to say thank you so much for everyone who's helped bring us to this point in the process. It's truly an honor, and we're excited for whatever comes next. PACT started in 1963 when Mr. Everett Brandon, the first black stockbroker in San Francisco's financial district, and Dr. Henry Lucas, a prominent dentist, joined forces to help increase black employment in downtown San Francisco. Recognizing that the job market was increasingly demanding a college degree, PACT started helping high school students and young adults to get into college with financial aid. And in 1965, PACT became one of the first organizations on the West Coast to receive federal TRIO funding. You might have heard of Upward Bound Grants, Educational Talent Search. So we've received those since 1965. These help low-income first generation to college students, high school and middle school students get into college. And throughout these 61 years, PACT has served 60,000 young students, and we've placed approximately 40,000 in college. At its peak, PACT served about 20 schools in San Francisco, including James Lick, Willie Brown, Balboa, Lowell, Independence, Downtown, Burton, Lincoln, Wallenberg, Marshall, Mission, and O'Connell, to name a few. We have a proven track record impacting underserved communities. However, we are under strict federal income guidelines, which do not match San Francisco's cost of living. We want to be able to serve San Francisco youth. We know that Bay Area cost of living is much, much higher. And the reality is there are low-income families that are currently not being able to be served through our programs, through the federal guidelines. So we're hoping that with the Legacy Registry, it'll open up some doors, more community, local partnerships, and we will be able to impact the community and continue the legacy. We thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Any other speakers?
Good afternoon. My name is Vartan Demersian. I represent Oscar's Photo Lab, a family business started in 1982. We've served the community, the photo community. We've been taking care of a lot of what the photographers, artists in the city have needed for a long time. A lot of times I feel like what we do is taken for granted, but then there's certain things that happen, whether it's a birth, whether it's a funeral, we're there to take care, to keep people's memories alive, take care of what they need. I'm not great at speaking, but, you know, my father started this business back in 1982. I worked with him one day after school. My mom said, hey, your father needs help. I was 13. I was at Hoover Middle School, and then I went to Lincoln High School, where you've supported us, so go Mustangs. And then San Francisco State, so go Gators. But thinking about what I was going to say today, you know, I'm a son of this city. I grew up in this city. My father started a business in this city. And I was looking through some of what we had. And one thing I came across today, and you can't see it, but this was the original business tax registration certificate that my father paid for. In case anybody knows, I don't know who it is, but the original tax, or not original, but the tax collector was Thad Brown back in 1982. We've been around a long time. We've supported this city. We've helped build this city. We've been through, God, go back, COVID, earthquakes, all sorts of things. We're the fabric of this city. Thank you for recognizing that. Thank you for giving us an opportunity to help us keep that. And just thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, commissioners and the staff. My name is Shaw Dagan, and I'm honored to be here. I opened Shaw Shoes in 1970, the same year I graduated from University of San Francisco. It has been a great success. We have numerous of movie stars, celebrities, and made Herb Cain columns. Some of you may know who he was. Three times, it was an honor because he came to the store and was very impressed. I handed down the store 10 years ago to my daughter, Caroline, working only part-time, helping her. What pleases me the most is the second and third generation customers, that a granddaughter comes and tells me that her mom and her grandmother has been my customers for years. A mother came in with a baby on a stroller quite a few times as a customer, and 20 years later, that baby on the stroller became the manager of Shaw Shoes. And I am honored to be part of the legacy store in San Francisco. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hello, everyone. Good afternoon, San Francisco commissioners and community members. My name is Kim Bardakian, and thank you for the opportunity to briefly speak in support of Oscar's Photo Lab with the Legacy Award. Oscar's Photo Lab has been a cherished San Francisco institution for 42 years, established in 1982 by Nubar Demirjian, a Lebanese immigrant who built this business with hard work, dedication, and a true passion for photography, who also happens to be my father-in-law. For over 20 years, his son Vartan worked alongside his father and has carried on his father's legacy, making Oster's one of the longest standing photo labs in the city, and actually one of the only photo labs standing. Starting with a simple sore front in the Tenderloin over four decades ago, Oscars has provided an invaluable service to professional photographers, artists, local residents, and many hobbyists, preserving memories and creating high-quality, tangible art. This legacy is more than the business. It's about the Demergens family commitment to San Francisco, to their craft, and to the thousands of local customers who've relied on their work to capture life's most important moments. In a rapidly changing city where small, family-owned businesses are finding it harder and harder to thrive and survive, and in an era where photos aren't as in demand as what they used to be, Oscar's Photo Lab continues to stand as a powerful reminder of what makes San Francisco unique. By awarding them this legacy, being part of the legacy registry, we're not celebrating a business, we're honoring a community pillar and supporting the preservation of our city's cultural and entrepreneurial spirit. Thank you for considering this recognition of Oscar's Photo Lab a true San Francisco legacy. I know Nubar is smiling down on all of us today.
Thank you. Any other public comment? I think so. Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
Thank you.
Sure.
Good afternoon, members of the San Francisco Small Business Commission. I'm honored to seek recognition for PACT on the Legacy Business Registry. We founded PACT in 1963, inspired by the vision of Dr. Carlton Goodlett Jr., whose legacy is honored here at City Hall. We wanted to see more minority businesses join the vibrant tapestry of San Francisco's small business community, contributing to the charm and fame of our city. To make this vision a reality, we raised funds, built a dedicated staff, and secured grants from the Federal Small Business Administration. We even inaugurated the SBA's 6x6x6 loan program, offering $6,000 for 6 years at 6% interest rate to support local entrepreneurs. We began our journey on the corner of 2nd and Market Streets and moved to Divisadero in 1970. And there we sparked the Divisadero Street Merchants Association to launch a beautification program, bringing in the city's signature stone garbage containers from California to Haight Street. We advocated for city parking and provided financial backing for local businesses by guaranteeing loans to the local Wells Fargo Bank. Our co-founders, Dr. Henry Lucas and Dr. Daniel Collins, ran a thriving dental practice on Sutter Street, just off of Divisadero, and over the years, PACT evolved primarily into a college advising service, implementing programs like Talent Search and Upward Bound under their federal TRIO programs. Today, we continue to occupy our beloved Victorian building on Divisadero near Alamo Park, and we aspire for it to become a legacy monument in the Western Addition. We are deeply grateful for the endorsement from Supervisor Preston and are hopeful for your support in achieving our status on the Legacy Business Registry, as already recommended by the Historic Preservation Commission. This recognition means the world to us. It reflects our commitment to San Francisco's rich history, and we are proud to be part of this incredible community. Thank you for your consideration and for making this honor possible. Our deepest thanks. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comment in the room? Okay. Well, thank you very much for all of your public comment. Seeing no further public comment is closed. Commissioners, questions, comments? Commissioner Benitez.
This one? Okay, found it. Oh, really great job. I love hearing all these stories. This is one of the favorite things that I always love to do, starting off with our meetings, is hearing about all the stories about how you came to be and everything like that. I do have a couple just really comments and then just one question at the very end. For Shaw Shoes, I love that you're a family-owned business, multi-generational. My wife and I also own a small business. Not quite seeing families just yet, but we've seen many dates, first dates, marriages, and divorces. So maybe hopefully soon we'll eventually see families come in. So I love hearing that story. We also have a daughter, too. We don't know if she'll ever run the business, but hopefully we're teaching her good responsibility. And if she ever wants to take it on, she can. But hopefully she just goes out into the world learning really good responsibilities from being at the store. Pat, I'm on DeViz all the time, and I didn't realize that you guys are right across the street from our store. You're above the skate shop, I believe, right? And so I can't wait to make it towards your area, or just right across the street, really. So eventually I'll say hi and say hello, but really excited that you're in the neighborhood. Love that building. A lot of people ask about it all the time. And I know Sean, too, from SF Skate, so he's a great guy. And then lastly, for Oscars, I was reading your application. I'd love to hear very quickly the story about the Rosa Parks photo in the Smithsonian. Is it still there, or how did it come to be?
I can come up if that's all right. Yeah. So we had a client that had the opportunity to photograph her. It's a longtime client. She had asked us to make a silver gelatin print from it. It was one of those things where you get kind of a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. So I took that on myself. I remember the evening very well. Closed down the store, turned on the radio, went into the dark room, and knocked out 6 versions of it for her, and she picked her favorite one. So it's a proud moment for me. Proud moment for me. So, yeah. Thank you for asking. Thank you for noticing that and asking that, because it's very very special.
Thank you. Any other commissioners? Commissioner Herbert.
I just wanted to say it's such a pleasure to sit up here and see so many great businesses and so many stories that you guys just make us who we are as a city. So thank you for coming forward and telling us your stories. It's really a pleasure to be here, to hear them.
Vice President Zuzunas.
Thank you to our legacy businesses for making time to come today. We know that you all work very hard, and so we appreciate you coming to City Hall. And yes, I love hearing the multi-generational businesses, and I think it's just a beautiful thing how we as businesses are so intertwined. And I love that we have a South of Market business, and that's been intertwined with my family. So thank you for representing and for being here.
Commissioner Ortiz Cartagena.
Yeah, I just want to thank all the businesses, PAC, the nonprofit, Shaw, Oscar Labs. I mean, being born and raised in San Francisco, it makes me proud, and it also gives me inspiration, because now I want my business to be generational, and your devotion to the city through your businesses and your family, I mean, that's what makes San Francisco what it is. And I'm just proud and honored just to even be here and learn about your businesses and about the hard work and everything. And, you know, PAC, you know, I went to high school here, so I definitely know the program. So I'm just proud. Like, this really makes me happy. This makes it all worthwhile. So thank you for coming up and sharing your stories.
Yes, thank you very much for all that you have done to build and continue your family businesses, as well as like the mission-driven work that, I mean, you all really do. I've realized over the many years of owning my own small business that owning a small business today is very much a mission-driven endeavor. And, you know, now that my children are a little bit older, and I can see like how proud I would be, right? Like if my child actually wanted to like do what I was doing. And I come from also like an in-law of a family owned business as well. And it's like to be able to see generations of your family being taken care of by this thing that somebody, you know, started at one point in time that was probably really hard and really scary for that person, has now been able to kind of feed so many branches of your family is really incredible. And this just like what everybody else has said is like one of my favorite parts of being a small business commissioner. I know when I walk around the city and I see those legacy business plaques, I'm always like, oh my gosh, there's another legacy business. It's like I get so excited to see them around. And I realize like what history our city actually is built on. And you kind of forget about that when you see so many shiny new things around you all the time. But, you know, without the businesses that you've built, we would not have all those shiny new, you know, things all around us. So I really appreciate all of the work and all of the heart and soul that you've put into all of your businesses. I encourage you to, you know, think of yourselves as part of the legacy business kind of club, and for you to, you know, consider yourselves a part of a very exclusive club that is an important part of the city. So thank you very much for all that you've done. I'm going to go ahead and leave it up for us to make a motion, I think, and have a feeling it will be a good motion. So, we have one more public comment. Is that okay? Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, let's see. Should we take a motion?
I second the motion. I mean, make the motion.
Would you like to make the motion?
I make it. To adopt all of these legacy businesses.
And
is there a second?
I'll second.
I'll second it.
Seconded by Commissioner Cornett. I'll read the roll. Commissioner Benitez?
Yes.
Commissioner Cornett?
Yes.
Commissioner Dickerson's absent. Commissioner Herbert?
Yes.
President Huey?
Yes.
Commissioner Ortiz Cartagena?
Yes.
And Vice President Zazunas?
Yes.
Motion passes. Congratulations.
Thank you. Next item, please.
Item 3, Board of Supervisors, File 240982, Disability Access Improvements for Places of Public Accommodation. This is a discussion and action item. The Commission will discuss and may take action on an ordinance amending the Building Administrative and Public Works Code to remove the local requirement for existing buildings with a place of public accommodation to have all primary entries and paths of travel into the building accessible to persons with disabilities or to receive a city determination of equivalent facilitation, technical infeasibility, or unreasonable hardship. Today we have Supervisor Mandelman presenting this item. Welcome.
Welcome, Supervisor Mandelman.
Hello, President Huey, Vice President Zazunas, commissioners. It's good to visit you. Executive Director Tang. The item before you is a simple but I think important ordinance that will do two things. First, it will sunset enforcement of the Accessible Business Entrance Program, a program I suspect that at least some of the, I think I know some of the members of this commission are painfully familiar with. And then secondly, it will formalize and require reporting by the Office of Small Business, the Mayor's Office of Disability, and the Department of Building Inspection on a new collaborative initiative that I am calling Beyond the Front Door. In 2016, at a time when many hundreds of small businesses were getting hit with ADA lawsuits, then Supervisor Katie Tang, established the ABE program to facilitate and push business owners and property owners to comply with federal and state laws related to front entrance access. The program has actually been quite successful, with more than 16,000 businesses having come into compliance, and another 2,000 more having submitted ABE checklists, a step on the path to compliance, and that has meant a lot for folks with disabilities in San Francisco accessing those locations. However, nearly 10 years later, roughly another 4,000 businesses have gone unheard from. And the city has extended the ABE program's deadlines multiple times at this point. Executive Director, then Supervisor Tang, authored a six-month extension of the deadline for submission of the compliance checklists to January 1, 2019, with a commensurate extension in other compliance deadlines. Then Supervisor Norman Yee, or I guess he was probably President Yee at that time, further pushed the compliance checklist deadline back to September 1st, 2020. And then Mayor Breed pushed those deadlines back to June 30th, 2022. And then I authored the first of two extensions earlier in the year, taking the deadline to June 30th of this year, and then did another one, which has pushed it back to December 31st of this year. But this can only go on for so long. And when my staff brought our last extension to the Building Inspection Commission on May 15th, its members quite reasonably made clear that they were not inclined to approve any further extensions to the program's deadlines. And so these 6,000 businesses that have not complied or not yet complied present a conundrum and a choice for our city government. We could double down on enforcement of the ABE program as originally passed, and I don't think that's a good idea. I think it presents at least three problems that I can think of. First, it would require allocating significant, scarce DBI and other city resources to chasing down, citing, and enforcing against these businesses and property owners. And some might think that in a moment of housing crisis, when we need our Department of Building Inspection maximizing its efficiency and doing all sorts of other things, that this is not the best use of those resources. And I think that's especially true given a second point, which that many of these businesses and property owners are extremely sympathetic cases. My office has heard lots of stories. You may have heard some as well. Small business owners who, notwithstanding their efforts to come into compliance, have run into any number of obstacles. Some have fallen prey to unscrupulous consultants who've performed unnecessary and costly work, resulting in many thousands of dollars in fees. Others have found that the required investment in upgrades would simply exceed their capacity and put them out of business. One owner reported that the upgrades would cost them $30,000. Thirdly, we have learned in conversations with the disability community that although access at the front door is, of course, critically important, it's not the only barrier, and sometimes not even the most important barrier to access to our local businesses for members of that community. So I felt that we have needed to come up with something better, and I do want to express a whole bunch of gratitude. I'll name some names in a minute, but generally to the Office of Small Business, the Mayor's Office of Disability, and DBI, that agreed to come up with something better. After many months of discussion, formally proposed what I think is a better way. This little concept paper is attached to the file as it appears for the Board of Supervisors, but I don't know if you all got it, so I'll just, you have it, they have it. Anyway, I'll leave a bunch of these here in case they don't. But as I said, the legislation before you partially implements recommendations that are in here, again, by sunsetting enforcement of ABE and requiring reporting back on beyond the front door. DBI has made many commitments to hiring a new certified access specialist inspector, performing a higher level of accessibility inspections while out in the field, working with OSB to create materials that can better inform prospective business owners about their obligations under federal and state laws. And by the way, those obligations will continue. The fact that we're taking the city out of the business of chasing folks down around the front entrance does not mean that people should feel like they don't have to comply with those laws. DBI will still be looking at those things as they permit new businesses coming into spaces. So this is not saying that the law doesn't apply. It's just saying as we allocate our resources, we're not going to focus on going after these business owners and property owners. And then lastly, OSB and the Mayor's Office of Disability are committing to work with community members to create a best practice guide for accessibility and are going to engage in campaigns to raise awareness about other types of disability access issues, including those impacting those with visual, hearing, and cognitive impairments. As I said, lots and lots of people helped get us here. In no particular order, I do want to thank your director, Katie Tang, Carrie Birnbach, and Michelle Reynolds from OSB. DBI has been, I think, eager to have this happen, but also very helpful in thinking through how we could better serve folks in the disability community and the small business community. So thank you, Director Patrick O'Riordan, Christine Gasparic, and Tate Hanna, who is here and can answer any questions that I don't know about on the DBI side. And then we've had great help from the mayor's office, from the mayor's office on disability. Former director Nicole Bond has been was very helpful, and then the current director Debbie Kaplan, as well as members of the mayor's disability council. And then in the city administrator's office, Jennifer Johnston, Sophie Hayward, and Angela Yip. All were important contributors. We got help from the city attorney's office from Peter Milianich and Vicky Wong, and Calvin Ho in my office did lots and lots of cat herding to get us here. And then many, many thanks to small business and disability community advocates who gave us their time and attention and good thinking. And I can try to answer any questions or make Tate Hanna come up and address them.
Thank you very much, Supervisor. Let's see, are there any comments or questions from commissioners? Or I'll give it a second. I just really want to appreciate you for, tackling this situation in a different, kind of with a different lens. I feel like this is something that I know, we've talked a lot about, obviously, with businesses individually as well as collectively, to kind of figure out how to make the landscape less fear-based and scary and checkbox-driven, but really to think about accessibility and disability and in much broader terms, because those terms actually apply to many more people and many more experiences, I think, than we actually are always, that we're actually aware of. So I think kind of thinking about how we can, change the conversation into something more positive and more incentivized is a wonderful step ahead. So I really appreciate that work.
Thank you. So. That's what we're trying to do.
So. let's see. Vice President Zizounis.
Thank you, Supervisor and team, for coming today and bringing this. We love streamlining legislation. And I think this process, as much as our good legislators have had to try to consolidate our offerings and really where the city can play a role in this, it's been a little confusing for small businesses to be only told, oh, you have to find a list from this list. We can't tell you exactly what to do, but you need to find somebody who can do that work, like a CASP inspection, and kind of refer it back to the private sector. So I want to understand if, and I think it was helpful in the legislation when it did lay out the order of operations that exist now with DBI and in if a business is not responsive. But if you could help me understand where this the step of now having an appeals commission for access plays in, if that's an existing clause or an existing
tell me where step. You, tell me where you are.
Yeah. The section 10105A. Part 3, Section 3.
Oh, the Access Appeals Commission?
Yeah.
So that's sticking around, I believe, for things that are not related to the ABE program.
Okay.
So basically, any compliance obligations under the ABE program are kind of going away with this. We are grateful to those who complied. We hope that this will help them avoid lawsuits. But we are basically saying, all right, we've done this for 8 years, and we're going to stop doing this. I don't know what else the Access Appeals Commission does, but it will not be doing. I mean, it hears access appeals related to building stuff, and there will still be enforcement happening in DBI around access. That would be on the front end as new businesses come in, as property owners do things to their property. But it won't be for existing currently operating businesses that somebody's coming after you, or property owners that have a current business that the city is coming after you. Now, everybody, again, be aware, there are people out there interested in bringing lawsuits against small businesses, but it won't be your city government doing that to you.
Okay, thank you.
If I can add, and also DBI, feel free to jump in if I'm not stating this correctly, but yeah. The Access Appeals Commission is also in existence because if you do tenant improvements, and especially if you reach a certain threshold, you are required to set aside a certain dollar amount for these accessibility improvements. And so there has always been and will remain a pathway for people to go through that Access Appeals Commission for certain appeals of the project scopes, for example, or potential infeasibility review. But again, I defer to DBI to further explain that.
No, I think the former supervisor captured it well. The Access Appeals Commission will remain in place. Again, as Supervisor Manneman laid out, there are still numerous access requirements that are baked into the building code. You still have to meet those when you're building a new building, when you're doing major renovations. So San Francisco was unique with this program, the ABB program, being proactive. No other jurisdiction in California that I'm aware of had a proactive approach. So we're just removing that sort of proactive aspect of this, but you are still required to meet accessibility requirements for new buildings and in renovations. And the Access Appeals Commission will remain in place to adjudicate any issues with those processes.
Okay, thank you. So when we're telling small businesses, make sure, after you do your accessible infrastructure changes, get a CASP inspection to make sure you don't, you're covered, right? So how is it reflected once they are, is it just reflected with the state and federal law once they're certified and with their property owner? There's no notice to the city anymore?
So the city would still be inspecting these properties, and we still are looking for accessibility metrics, essentially. And so if you aren't complying with those, that could still be a violation on the city level. I'm not sure if you're talking about a private CASP inspector coming in and checking, but we would be doing inspections. If you're, say, constructing a new business place or a new building that has a storefront on the ground floor, we'd come in and inspect and make sure that the counter is an appropriate height level, that the point of sale system is accessible for folks, things of that nature that are baked into the code. And as mentioned in the legislation, and Supervisor Mandelman mentioned this, we are trying to add another CASP inspector, expand that capability within the department to be more proactive. So when that new building is getting constructed, we're up in front of it saying, hey, this actually needs to be down a couple inches to make sure that it's accessible to folks. Or, hey, what other requirements? We want to make sure that that's up front before things are put in place, bolted down, and then there's further cost to change things on the back end.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification.
Commissioner Herbert?
I have a question. So let's say you're going into an existing space that is up for rent or up for sale, and their ADA or their bathrooms are not ADA compliant, but it's an old building. Will the new tenant be required to make those compliant, or
So that gets a little bit complicated. It would depend on the scale of renovations, right? That's the trigger. That's the difference between the ABE program and other jurisdictions. This is a constant proactive trigger. In other jurisdictions, a certain scale of renovations would trigger looking at those accessibility requirements. The other difficult thing here is that we can't speak to private contracts between a landlord and the tenant. That landlord may put in that contract that the tenant is required to pay for or be responsible for certain accessibility upgrades. That's become, obviously, I think you all are aware of that. There's now a state law that requires contract signer to actually be aware of that. The person that writes up the contract has to make it notify that that is a new requirement in the contract. But that would be between two private entities. That's outside of our scope.
Okay. Thank you. And I just wanted to say thank you to Rafael Mendelman, because it seems like this legislation is going to prevent businesses and people who need ADA compliance. It will stop pitting them against each other, and that's really important. I have a family member who's recently needs ADA everywhere she goes, and so I've become a lot more aware of what's needed. And I would hate to see anybody with special needs feeling uncomfortable or, you know, like the bad guy when they come into a place. So it seems like this could help with that. So thank you.
And that was actually something that we heard from folks on the Mayor's Disability Council, is they don't really, I mean, there are a host of disability community needs. They did not want to be perceived or be set up in the sort of going to be in opposition to the small business community, and is one reason why some of those folks were supportive of this legislation. And again, I mean, I think it's important that we do this. I think I don't want to see the city spend the next 2 or 3 years chasing down these 6,000 properties. I think that would be bad for the city and bad for those folks. But it doesn't mean, again, that the ADA doesn't apply, that when people are trying to do upgrades to those spaces, that they're not going to have to get compliant. Like, at some point, there will be a point when all 6,000 of those spaces are going to be, compliant with the ADA. It's just, we're not, as a matter of city priority, going to get it all, insist that everybody get it all done by the end of next year or whatever. It's, you know, at this point, it'll happen as it happens, and with the caveat that, like, you're all at risk if you don't do this because of the potential lawsuit. Mm. Not from us, but from private parties.
Commissioner Ortiz.
First, I want to thank you, Supervisor Mendelman, for just the common sense of this, and thinking more globally about the city and how to use our precious resources. So appreciate that. And also Director Tang, for initiating the program, because initially, like, I wasn't necessarily too sold on it, but I'll be honest, now that I'm on the street, like, you kind of made the boogeyman go away. A lot of the small businesses that we just ignored this, like, it brought it to the forefront in a positive way. And in addition to the resources that were behind the program, like, I think we did a lot of good work in the community, and I don't want to jinx us, knock on wood. Like, just from the optics of being on the ground, I've seen less of those, like, drive-by or Google lawsuits, because I think our small businesses have become more aware, plus the state legislation that, you know, makes you be aware that what you're signing and what you potentially could be liable for doing. So I want to thank you for that, because initially, like I said, I wasn't necessarily for it. But, and then lastly, I had a question, just as not necessarily pertaining exactly to this, but in a current location, what's the dollar threshold amount in a tenant improvement that requires, like, ADA upgrades? Is it like at $1.50? I remember.
I don't recall the exact threshold right now, so I apologize. I think Director Tang, maybe.
I think it's somewhere under $200,000, but it does change every year, so I can look that up. But
yeah,
I recall it's slightly under 200.
I can certainly get back to you and get you a solid dollar figure on that.
Yeah, I'm helping a couple of businesses, and like, I'm telling them, you know, be careful, because if you go overboard, then you're going to open another can of worms that gets going. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Careful. That's it. Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
Yes, I just wanted to also appreciate Director Tang's work on the ABE program. I know that's something that we talk about every few weeks or so. But looking at this number here, I mean, 16,505 out of 23,504 businesses, that is a lot of businesses. Over 82% of businesses have now made improvements that perhaps were not incentivized to make improvements before. And so, you know, that's a huge feat in the city that has incredibly old infrastructure. So one of the things that I guess I'm curious about is, like, how, and this is not, maybe this is more of a rhetorical kind of, you know, question, but, like, you know, how does our city fare in terms of, like, its, you know, welcomeness? And how inviting are we to somebody who is traveling with, and, you know, has a disability or experiences life with a disability? Like, how does our city look to somebody, like, who may not be able to access the entryway to begin with? And then, like, what are some of the other things that we can do? And I'm really excited to see how you engage traveler communities, local communities, to kind of find out what we can do as small businesses to make things better. So I think, you know, my ask would be that as you engage with more communities and as you engage with this piece of legislation and have these conversations, to be able to really share with us many of those, like, best practices. I know you have some listed here already, but, like, for small businesses to be able to go on a site and be able to get inspired by how they can make their spaces better, that would be really interesting to me. Like, even if it was just, like, you know, like a gallery, like a photo gallery on a website or something like that. Because just as business owners, we want to do the best that we can, and we want to do, you know, like, whatever it is to make things better for everyone around us. And I think sometimes what we're missing is time and inspiration because we're so heads down. So if there was a way that while you're learning to be able to share those learnings with us, I think we would be happy to share that with our small business communities as well. And hopefully through that, we can kind of create a generative change within our city.
Thank you for that invitation. I think the city certainly is a better city for folks with disabilities accessing those spaces because of the ABE program. And so thank you, President Huey and Commissioner Ortiz, for acknowledging that a lot of good work has been done under that program. And I also think that there is really an opportunity now, and I think interest in all these departments in collaborating on the kind of thing that you're talking about and getting, you know, whatever resources we can to small businesses, because I think they want to be open and accessible. And, you know, there are some win-wins here, and just more communication and more, you know, of the kind of examples of your sharing with putting stuff on websites, making stuff easy for people to see, like raising issues that someone might not think about and that wouldn't be that hard as they're setting up a new business or adapting their existing business to make it a little more welcoming. So I think we're going to have those conversations over the next year. I think we're going to get reports. I think you might, you know, maybe want to do some kind of conversation here at this commission as that work goes forward, and either hear about it or inform it or whatever, however we do it. But yeah, I think there's opportunities for this going forward.
Great. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you.
Oh, one more comment from Director Tang.
Thank you. I just wanted to first just get back to Commissioner Ortiz-Cartagena about the threshold, that amount that would trigger certain types of accessibility requirements. And as mentioned, it does change every year. And for 2024, it's a little bit above $200,000. Last year was about a little under $200,000. So that's roughly the threshold amount. And then just to also reiterate that our team, especially our permitting team, but also all of our business counselors, will continue to advise all businesses seeking permits for any improvements to their storefront, that they should be aware of all the, you know, federally mandated accessibility requirements, point them to resources like the grant that we offer for accessible barrier removal and others. So that work will continue and be ongoing.
Great. Thank you very much. Well, any other commissioner questions, comments? Seeing none, I think we will open it up for public comment. Any public comment on this agenda item? Seeing no public comment is closed. I think that's it, right? We don't have to make a motion or anything, right?
No, we do. You can recommend it.
Oh, okay. So does somebody, since it's an action item.
I move to recommend to support.
Motion in support of this legislation by Commissioner Ortiz-Cartagena. Is there a second?
I second.
Second by Commissioner Herbert. I'll read the roll. Commissioner Benitez?
Yes.
Commissioner Cornett?
Yes.
Commissioner Dickerson's absent. Commissioner Herbert?
Yes.
President Huey?
Yes.
Commissioner Ortiz-Cartagena?
Yes.
And Vice President Zuzunas?
Yes.
Motion passes. Great. Thank you. Thank you very much. Next item, please. Item 4, Board of Supervisors, File 240926, Fee Elimination and Administrative Provisions. This is a discussion and action item. The Commission will hear and possibly take action on an ordinance amending the Business Tax, Business and Tax Regulations Code, Administrative Code, Health Code, Police Code, and Public Works Code to make several changes if the voters approve Prop M in the November 5th, 2024 election and other changes regardless of whether it passes.
Hi, welcome.
Presenting. Hi, thank you.
Sorry.
Hi, I'm Amanda Confried, Chief of Policy and Communications in the Office of the Treasurer and Tax Collector. Thanks for having me back again. This is a kind of a final piece about license fees that we've been talking about together for a couple of years now, and it's an exciting step. So with the support of the mayor, President Peskin, and Supervisor Mandelman, as part of the business tax package that's on the ballot, that's Prop M, there was an agreement to waive up to $10 million in annual fees that hit small businesses that pay generally, these are regulatory license fees that are paid to departments like public health, police, fire, entertainment, et cetera. They're the ones that businesses will recognize. They come in an annual bill from the tax collector. It's a very popular bill. Everyone really loves it. It puts all of your charges together once a year with some really steep penalties if you forget to pay it. So if Prop M passes next week, $10 million of these fees will be waived, and the benefit almost entirely goes to small businesses. This will happen in 2026. So I do just want to say clearly, folks, regardless of what happens next week, people will still get their bills January or February of next year, but that will be the last time they get these bills. And if these fees are waived, the benefits are primarily felt by restaurants. So 91% of restaurants in San Francisco will no longer get a bill from our office, this unified license bill at all. Every single fee that they pay will be waived. And for nightlife businesses, 87% of those bills are entirely gone. Now, there are many other small businesses that will also benefit, but that's where those are the two industries that pay the most right now. So they're going to feel the biggest benefit from this legislation. As a reminder, the reason that this came to be was through a lot of advocacy by folks like Director Tang and others about these bills and saying, like, this is really a lot for small businesses to pay every year. So back in the late teens, I think it was like 2018, 2019, our office actually looked at the impact of these bills. If you add up how much a small business pays and you add up their license fees with their taxes, their cumulative burden is higher than bigger businesses. So our smallest businesses actually are paying the most. I know this is not a surprise to anybody here, but actually showing that was helpful for policymakers. So what we did to figure out which license fees to waive was we first looked at the license fees that were predominantly paid by restaurants, entertainment, and nightlife. Again, because we know they're bearing the brunt of these regulatory fees, primarily through DPH fees, health fees. We worked closely with the Office of Small Business and with departments to kind of cull down the list and say, are these the right fees, the ones that have the most impact? Of course, we started with data and then had to talk to people who actually knew what these different fees meant and what they did. And then we figured out, okay, well, how much revenue is the city collecting from these each year? How many businesses are paying them? And what would that look like for departments ongoing? There were a few types of license fees that we decided to add on that weren't kind of our typical ones on our bill. Those include tables and chairs fees, the merchandise display fees, and the point of sale fees. So those weights and measure fees are all included as well. The way that this is going to work is businesses will not have to do anything to get this benefit. If this legislation passes at the board, these fees will actually be set to $0. So it's not based on, you know, your individual business's gross receipts and you have to tell us something every year. The city is going to stop charging them altogether, $0 for each of these fees. And then departments are going to actually recoup the revenue through the general fund from the general tax revenue. So for businesses, you'll just stop getting a bill or you'll get a bill with much less on it. And that is why it is because of this legislation. A couple other things to note in this legislation. There's a lot grouped in here. We are also seeking to increase the small business exemption threshold for the shared spaces waiver. So for businesses that are getting parklets, right now, if you get below like $2.5 million in gross receipts, you get a 50% haircut on your shared spaces fee. If Prop M passes, that $2.5 million raises to $5 million because that's what's happening in the tax too. That small business exemption threshold would go up. So that will help a number of businesses as well. It's also extending a couple of things that keep happening at the board, and we said, let's just do this once and for all. So that's these location and device fees for taxis. The point of sales for taxis, and there's also a suspension of the registration certificate and fee requirements for taxi and rideshare drivers. Again, this is something that we have to go to the board every 5 years to reauthorize, so we said let's just put it in here and make it clear. And then we're also, and this is important because this is regardless of what happens with Prop M, we're amending some of the penalty and interest provisions. So we've heard loud and clear that we right now charge 10% as soon as you're late on this bill and it's very difficult. We're going to align this with all of the other business taxes that we have and the penalties, which start at 5%. So if you're still getting this bill for whatever reason and you pay late, it's not quite as big of a penalty right off the bat, and it does grow with time. And then these bills will also be due a little bit earlier in the year if Prop M passes, just to give a preview. And so when you go to renew your registration, which will now happen towards the beginning of the year, at the end of February, you'll actually be able to see, oh, I'm going to owe some license fees. This is how much I'm going to owe. And then you'll have a month to pay those. So we're trying to pull everything together to make it easier and have less contact with our office because everyone loves the tax collector. And that's all for me. I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Commissioner Herbert.
Well, I wanted to say, as a restaurant owner, yay, jumping for joy, because there are a lot of fees. So I can probably speak for all other restaurant owners, too, when, you know, I say thank you. So February we'll get notice, just to clarify, of the fees, and then we'll have a month to pay them.
Starting in 2026.
2026. Yeah. So we'll still have tables and chairs fees and all that kind of thing. Yeah. Until 2026.
Right. Yeah. And the fee waiver, this legislation is at the board. The hearing is in a couple of weeks. And much of what I talked about only goes into effect if Prop M passes. Some things like the deadline go into effect no matter what.
But thank you.
Just to be clear.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner Ortiz.
Thank you, Amanda, for the presentation. And I love this because it's bringing our city into the right direction. This is the spirit, right? Like, how can we simplify? How can we help small business? Like, common sense approaches and, you know, really helping our restaurant and nightlife business. So I just love it. I hope it passes. But even the parts that don't pass, you know, still, like, even streamlining the deadlines and the penalties, I mean, you know, it kills you for a small business. Like, that 10%, you know, it's like street tax almost, you know. You can go to your corners, you know. So appreciate that, really. Thank you.
Yes, I think you'll find that most small businesses are going to be in favor of reducing fees. And I mean, I think one of the things that being now seeing kind of how City Hall works versus, like, you know, how we operate in our small businesses is that, like, I think the things that you think are common sense are totally not common sense to the rest of us oftentimes. So when I get a bill in the mail, I'm entirely confused whether I got that same bill last week or if this is, like, you know, is this from the same department? Is this about the same thing? And so for many of us, it's very challenging to kind of figure out how our entire tax and fee picture looks. So I think the city has done a great job of already trying to streamline that, and then now trying to streamline it and remove it is a wonderful step forward for all of us. So hopefully this helps small businesses not find it so intimidating to start a business in San Francisco. Vice President Zunis.
Thank you so much for coming and for working with us all these years. I think we were talking about fee streamlining before it had any glimmer of hope in the legislative realm. So this is really exciting for our commission and, you know, for some of our newcomers. We played a big part in this work, and we're really thankful to our current leadership and our past leadership for supporting, you know, this narrative of reducing fees. I you know, in addition to kind of all of these conversations and crowdsourcing from the small business community, what fees, you know, were burdensome, was there any technical or data-driven tools that you all used? I know that fees are often based on Nexus reports and studies, and I know that there's a lot of outdated ones that haven't had the reporting, that haven't been in compliance for reporting or new Nexus studies, and I'm curious if you kind of started from ones that like that, and if there were any that you think could be added in but need more
Yeah, support great question. Yeah, I think these fees in particular are more of the, like, one size fits all annual license fees that departments charge. So not the ones really that have the Nexus study per se. And the way that we approached it at first was really to look at, we overlaid basically tax data to say how big are these businesses that are paying these, and then how many businesses are paying, and tried to find, you know, the biggest bang for our buck, basically. We wanted to get rid of the fees that had mostly small businesses paying, a lot of small businesses paying, and then we really focused on the zero bill concept because we realized, you know, everyone likes a reduction, but, you know, the best is if we can make sure a business really just stops getting this bill altogether. And so when we really got down, that's where we were kind of looking at, like, okay, what could we do? What are these last stragglers? Okay, maybe it only has 50 businesses paying this, but that means another 50 restaurants won't get this bill at all. I think there are, you know, a number of other fees out there that everyone would very much like to tackle. But I think in terms of the license fee realm, we're severely reducing the number of licenses that we're going to collect.
Okay. Yeah. And what do you feel like was the, I mean, I was always told the fees balance our budget, you know? So, like, what is the political rationale that allowed them, our legislators, to be confident in reducing?
Yeah, I mean, I think for this, pairing it with the business tax overhaul was the right timing. So it was really, we're taking, you know, a big look at how we need to reframe business taxes overall and this huge amount of revenue. And so as long as we're kind of adjusting billions of dollars, really this is $10 million of, you know, $1.5 billion collection for the gross receipts taxes. And so I think it came into perspective that this was a relatively small amount. I will say there's still some work to do between the controller's office and individual departments to understand how to operationalize this for their budgets, to make sure that, you know, they continue. They're still doing the same work. So it's not like you're not going to have to get a permit and you're not going to get inspected. All of that work is still going to continue. You just don't have to pay for it anymore. So it's really replacing who pays for that work, not getting rid of the work itself.
That's really helpful. Thank you for helping me visualize that decision.
Great. Any other questions? Seeing no other questions. Any public comment? Seeing no public comment. Public comment is closed. And I guess, this is an action item, so we'll have to make a motion. Any commissioner?
Motion to approve to support this legislation. Commissioner Ortiz Cartagena, seconded by Commissioner Benitez. I'll read the roll. Commissioner Benitez?
Yes.
Commissioner Cornett?
Yes.
Commissioner Dickerson's absent. Commissioner Herbert?
Yes.
President Huey?
Yes.
Commissioner Ortiz Cartagena?
Yes.
And Vice President Zazunas?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Great. Thank you so much, Amanda. Next item, please.
Item 5, approval of draft meeting minutes. This is a discussion and action item.
Commissioners, any comments or questions about the draft meeting minutes? No questions. Any public comment? No public comment. Public comment is closed. Commissioner, anybody want to make a motion to approve the draft meeting minutes? I will make a motion to approve the draft meeting minutes. Is there a second?
I second.
Motion to approve draft meeting minutes by President Huey, seconded by Commissioner Herbert. Commissioner Benitez?
Yes.
Commissioner Cornett?
Yes.
Commissioner Dickerson's absent. Commissioner Herbert?
Yes.
President Huey?
Yes.
Commissioner Ortiz Cartagena?
Yes.
And Vice President Zazunas?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Great, thank you. Next item.
Item 6, general public comment. This is a discussion item allowing members of the public to comment generally on matters that are within the Small Business Commission's jurisdiction but not on today's calendar, and suggest new agenda items for the Commission's future consideration.
Any public comment? Seeing no public comment, public comment is closed. Next item, please.
Item 7, director's report. This is a discussion item.
All right, good evening, commissioners. I know that two of the updates I was going to give were already covered under the legislation discussed earlier today. So just sharing that recently, additional pieces of legislation that may be of interest to you. There was legislation introduced by Supervisor Walton recently regarding 3rd Street and the Alcohol Restricted Use District. So this new legislation, which is still pending at the Board of Supervisors, would allow Type 42 establishments to open within the 3rd Street Alcohol Restricted Use District in the Bayview with a conditional use authorization. Currently, this is actually not permitted. So the second one that was introduced by Supervisor Mantleman is that he is removing from the police department the police code, the police department's role in regulating public bathhouses. And so public bathhouses will still have other requirements they have to go through, for example, through department building inspection. However, the police department will no longer be regulating. So I think those were the two legislative updates I wanted to give. And then also just wanted to remind commissioners about new ethics regulations that took effect. So Proposition D, which was adopted by voters in November of last year, is taking effect, I think, actually this month. It was mid-October. And it sets additional standards for things like gifts that we can receive or are prohibited from receiving from restricted sources. So there are lots of resources available, whether online or even through our city attorney's office or the Ethics Commission, if any of you have any questions about these new additional regulations. And for example, our department will need to start posting whenever we receive department gifts like tickets to events on our websites on a monthly basis. But if any of you have any particular questions pertaining to your specific role as a commissioner, please let me or Carrie know, and we can connect you with either the resources or people to help you clarify these questions. So those are all of my updates. And oh, sorry, I should also note that on behalf of Rick, inviting you all to the upcoming Heritage Happy Hour. The next one is November 14th at Butter, which is at 354 11th Street. Again, that's November 14th at Butter, 354 11th Street in District 6. And that's it. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Any questions? No questions. Any public comment? No public comment. Public comment is closed. Thank you very much, Director Tang, for your report. Next item, please.
Item 8, Commissioner Discussion and New Business. This is a discussion item.
Commissioner Ortiz Cartagena.
I have two items. One is around, again, compact mobile food. I mentioned it in the last meeting. I've mentioned it in several meetings. I need some urgency on this. It's really affecting especially the Mission District. We have a ton of curbside street food vendors that are looking for pathways to legitimacy. And without direction, there's an explosion of now, especially at night, that compete with our brick and mortars. And you're pitting community against one another. It's the mobile, compact mobile food against brick and mortar, and even the mobile food, because there is a pathway for that. So I need DPH, DPW. I know they probably have this the thing in place, but I need this rolled out. I need some dates. I need some urgency on this because it's really, really having a negative impact on my community. So I asked Director if you could talk to both department heads and bring them here and get some clarity on it when they're going to roll out. And what really bothers me more is, you know, we've done a lot of groundwork. LA has the program rolled out. They have compact mobile food carts already in place. They've even given grants. And one, I hate that LA is better than us in anything, you know, on a personal level. But two is there is precedent, and they have strict, you know, health code laws just like ours. So we need to get this done. It's really now starting, like, I've been saying it for like 2-3 years now. So I would like those department heads to come present to us. The second one is regarding supplier numbers with the city. So to do business with the city, you must have a supplier ID. To get the supplier ID, you must open a portal. It's a process. It's a free process. However, it's a complicated process, and I believe it's an unnecessary complicated process. And it's a good way for our small businesses, restaurants, or whomever that wants to engage with doing business with the city just to generate revenue. Like, think of all the departments across the city that maybe have lunch. There's very limited suppliers. So to order lunch from a restaurant, you need a supplier ID, right? And it's really hard, especially to our small businesses and are monolingual or maybe are not our tech savvy, because there is no transparency on why the path takes so long or gets like paused. I'll give you an example. Through Klecha, we helped one business. We knew where the pause was. It was in a department. It took 15 hours for the whole process. That's a lot of hours that a small business won't do and can't afford a consultant or an expediter to do. Another business took 23 hours. And that, even the actual departments, all the paperwork was submitted, and it was almost an IT that nobody could give us a clarifying answer why this process was being held up. So it's just little things like this that makes it so hard to engage and do business in the city. And doing business with the actual city of San Francisco is a huge boom, especially for restaurants, right? Because, again, think about all the multiple departments that have luncheons. And really, they only buy from a very select few that knew how to do the process. So I want to have, what department is that, Director?
It's multiple departments, but we did reach out to the city administrator's office. Okay. To see if we could line up all the various staff that could have a say in improving the process.
Okay, thank you.
I feel like something we talked about a while ago on the commission is having more kind of forum-like opportunities here. So maybe this is one where we can, when we have it agendized, that there's going to be staff that are on every step of this process, and we can invite small businesses so they have a order of operations kind of presentation too. Just a thought.
They had a supplier number, right, your dad? For the deli?
Oh, yeah, but I have crazy stories about, like...
How hard it is to do.
Yeah, you know, the insurance have, you know, there's so many holdups, right? You have to have certain types of paperwork to submit, and sometimes the third parties involved don't know exactly what the city is requesting on that. You know, there's definitely, I feel like, opportunities to do best practices or, like, how-tos on...
And I don't want to beat anybody up. Like, that's not what, you know, because it's not one department head. It's nobody, you know. It's just something that's, like, easy, low-hanging fruit that we could clear up. And trust me, it'd be a boom for our small businesses. Even if it's a $300 order, that's $300 they didn't have, you know.
Mm-hmm. One thing I will note that over time, as you know, when laws are layered on top of each other, it has contributed to the challenges, right? So, you know, one year our legislators, decision makers say, okay, we want to make sure that everyone has equal benefits. You know, every employee that is, you know, hired by a company in the city, they must have equal benefits. Another year, we say, we care about this other issue, and here goes another piece of legislation. So it's layered and layered upon over time. And so it does take some effort legislatively to unpackage all of that. So although we would like to, you know, wave our wands and make it easier right now, we probably need to go through some legislative process to undo some of those things and, you know, get the support of people to do so, right? So I just wanted to say, like, it's maybe not as easy as we'd all hope, but... You know, it's been built up over time.
Didn't somebody recently put forth legislation regarding requirements for city contracting and trying to, like, take some out?
I think that had to do with our restriction on allowing contracts with companies based in certain states that didn't support, I think, same-sex marriage, for example. So, and that was rolled back because, again, it was actually very prohibitive for certain things that the city had to purchase mm-hmm. or, mm-hmm. yeah. And so, yeah, that's one example mm-hmm. of how, and that was just one law that was rolled back, but there are many others.
So are those in the charter, city charter as well, or just in contracting?
I believe it's in the city, in the administrative code.
Administrative yes. code. Mm-hmm. Got it. Thank you.
One last thing, just again, everybody in those offices with the suppliers, they've been amazing to work with. So it's not the people. It's just, like you said, the layer of bureaucracy throughout the years, because they've been our partner in getting these supplier IDs to businesses. So I do want to highlight, like, they go above and beyond with customer service. So I do want to put that as note.
Vice President Zunis, did you have any? I can share that we've been having these block parties in Chinatown on Waverly, and our last one this year will be November, I forget what it is, November next Friday, the one after, it's like November 8th, sorry, got confused. November 8th will be our last block party for the year, and you know, we're excited about the activation. I think it has been an opportunity to bring people further into Chinatown to understand kind of like what else is beyond Grant. And you know, I think going forward next year, it'll be interesting to see how we kind of do more activations, if they're going to look a little bit different. This year has been kind of the year of like night markets and nighttime activations. I would love to see if we can figure out how to get people further into the communities, like at night, but also like throughout the year. So I'm really excited that there's energy. And I think there's been a bunch of other things that have been happening, but I can't remember all of them right now. One of the things that I do want to look into is kind of like all the other things that businesses, I know for me, like our overhead has been creeping up, and like certain things like internet, electricity, you know, Recology, or, you know, trash pickup, those types of things. Obviously, we all have to pay for those things. But I've just noticed that, like, from having my past business and then now having this new business, the cost of doing business has greatly increased. And so one of those being, you know, just the trash bills and things like that. So I'm kind of interested in what that looks like for our small businesses and how we can kind of support in just kind of like basic understanding of what it takes to open a business, you know? So those are some of the things that I'm kind of working on right now. All right. Anybody else? I thought you were going to come with like half hour presentations here. We're ready for a 4-hour meeting. Next time. Well, seeing no other questions or comments up here, any public comment? No, you don't want to comment on all of the exciting items. Well, you know, I just want to appreciate you also for sitting and being here. Well, seeing no public comment is closed. Next item, please.
Item 9, adjournment. SFGov TV, please show the Office of Small Business slide.
We will end with a reminder that the Small Business Commission is the official public forum to voice your opinions and concerns about policies that affect the economic vitality of small businesses in San Francisco. If you need assistance with small business matters, continue to reach out to the Office of Small Business. Meeting is adjourned.